I just want to talk for a few minutes and kind of just reflect on a few thoughts, really, before we have the baptisms this morning. Also, I just want to add that I have a very big basket full of eggs here. And these are for anybody who can answer a question that I'm going to pose to you in a minute, okay? So you've got to listen. If you want an egg, you've got to be able to answer this question, okay? So I'm gonna put them back down there. So you've got to listen carefully. That's not bribery, by the way. Am I on here, Stan? There we are. Spring is a miracle, isn't it? Oh, that it would come, and the rain would stop, and the snow would dissipate. But isn't a seed an incredible thing? I mean, some of you biologists amongst us would be able to tell me exactly the kind of what's happening biologically there. But we know that this seed that looks as though it's dead, of course it's not dead, but it looks as though it's dead. It's dry, and if you're a gardener, you put it in the ground, and hopefully it starts to grow. Everything I am told that is needed to feed that seed, I mean, add water, everything's add water and it will grow. But within it, there's the energy source, if you like, to nurture and to cause that seed to grow. It sends out a root that draws in. Is this right, Ruth? Am I right? I'm okay so far. I do a bit of gardening. Not always that successful. Has anybody guessed what this is yet? Oh, yeah, okay. Big Ed. But this happens, this miracle happens before our very eyes all the time. And at this time of year, it's gorgeous, isn't it? Seeing the little shoots starting to come up. I was admiring the cowslips the other day, and you can see the dafts coming up and all of these beautiful things. This beautiful picture, really, of what we're thinking about today. And there's a wonderful flower. From such kind of small beginnings, such kind of almost impossible beginnings, something, I mean, they're enormous, aren't they, sunflowers? They stand right up here and they bow their head and they show you their glory. And within the midst of a sunflower, the head of it is full of seeds, the potentiality of this one seed to produce many, many more. And here's the questions coming in a minute. Many, many more seeds is phenomenal. It's exponential. It's profligate almost. So here's the question. How many seeds do you think? I'll give it to you to the near. Well, I want to be generous because it is Easter and I want to be generous to you. To the nearest one, does a sunflower produce? I can't leave you to think about that. There, they're beautiful, isn't it? Beautiful. We love sunflowers. Let me read to you these words of Jesus. There were some Greeks, not geeks, but it could have been geeks, in town who came up to worship at the feast. So there was a big feast happening in Jerusalem. And these Greeks, who were not part of the Jewish people, traveled. They were obviously interested. They were what you might call God seekers. They had questions. They wanted to know what was happening in the hubbub and the worship center. So they came up and they approached Philip. Philip was one of Jesus' disciples, and maybe he had a bit of a Greek-sounding name. So they said to Philip, who was from Galilee, "Sir, we want to see Jesus. Can you help us?" Really good question. They'd heard about him. They wanted to see him. They wanted a personal meeting with him. Philip went and told Andrew, and Andrew and Philip together, I always think that's slightly kind of funny, isn't it, that they kind of team up together and go off to speak to Jesus. And Jesus answered, "Time's up. The time has come for the Son of Man to be glorified." And this is from John's Gospel. That's a really important word in John's Gospel. When John talks about Jesus being glorified, he means he's going to be nailed to a cross. That's what John has in his mind when he's writing this book. The glorification of Jesus is to be executed on a Roman cross. How strange that is. Listen carefully. This is Jesus then. So this is the answer to the question. This is the way Jesus answers questions so often. These guys wanted to see Jesus. They wanted to speak to him. And he tells a story. He did that so often. Very oblique. But a wonderful story. Unless A grain of wheat is buried in the ground, dead to the world. It is never going to be any more than a grain of wheat. But if it's buried, it sprouts and reproduces itself many times over. In the same way, anyone who holds on to life just as it is destroys that life. But if you let it go, reckless in your love, you'll have it forever, real and eternal. This is from the Message translation. A great translation of that verse. If you hold on to it, that which you grasp and cling on to, you are likely to lose and you're likely to miss out on all of the other great things that God has in store for you. We're, of course, just coming off the back of Good Friday, and there's something incredibly stark about the cross. As we've mentioned, it was a Roman form of execution. Many of us may have crucifixes or crosses hanging around our necks this morning, which is fine, they're nice pieces of jewelry. But in another way, it's a bit odd, because they're actually instruments of execution. It would be a bit like having an electric chair hanging around your neck. There was nothing beautiful about a Roman cross. In fact, it was for the lowest of the low. Romans couldn't be crucified. Only heathens, the lowest of the low, the thieves and the robbers, those were the kind of people who got crucified. And so when we can get kind of emotional and emotionally involved in the beauty of the cross, there's no beauty there. It's desolate. But as somebody famously once said about Good Friday, it's Friday, but Sunday's coming. Resurrection's coming. You see the picture? That moment of death, Jesus tasted death in a real way, seemed like the end. To his disciples watching on, who'd invested so much hope in this Jesus, to see him crucified at the cross signaled for them the end. This is desolate. The one who we thought would be the king who'd overthrow everything and overthrow these Romans has been crucified. How can this be glory? How can this be the kind of king that's going to liberate us and set us free from oppression and death itself? That was their expectation and hope. How can he be this way? Jesus said, unless a grain of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it cannot produce fruit. And Jesus died. And the cross became a place of flowering. It's really interesting. In the tradition of the church, there were some funny kind of ideas in the early centuries of the church that went like this. One of them was that the cross itself was taken from a slither of wood from the tree of the fruit of good and evil in the Garden of Eden. There was another one that said when Christ died upon the cross, it began to sprout. Flowers began to appear at the base of the cross. These, of course, are all just funny thoughts, really, in a sense. But they were making a point. There's a really ancient hymn that says this: faithful cross above all other, one and only noble tree, none in foliage, none in blossom, none in fruit, they peer, thy peer may be. In other words, this place of torture and death became a place of fruitfulness and rescue and salvation. Jesus conquered the grave. The Apostle Paul put it this way. He said, unless Christ rose from the dead, our faith is in vain. You may be sitting here this morning thinking, this is all a bit strange. These are difficult concepts for me to get my head around. This is a kind of funny sort of stuff that these people are getting excited about. And the Apostle Paul, in one sense, would agree with you. He would say this, and he did say this: if Christ didn't rise from the dead, your faith is in vain, so you may as well eat and drink, for tomorrow you die. But Christ, in fact, Paul goes on to say, is the first fruits from among the dead of all those who will follow him. So in other words, he, in his resurrection, was the trailblazer, the one who opened the door for all those who have faith in him to follow through. It was a place of blossoming. And this idea of sacrifice, victory through sacrifice, is really embedded in our cultural understanding and our understanding as human beings. There's a very a wonderful man called Maximilian Kolbe. I don't know if you've ever heard of Maximilian Kolbe. He was a Roman Catholic priest, and he was imprisoned in Auschwitz in July 1941. Some prisoners escaped from Auschwitz, and the Gestapo rounded up randomly 10 individuals to take them to the death chamber. And one of these men, Francis Guy Genestic, broke down and began to cry. And he said, "Oh, my family, my wife and my children, I'll never see them again." And this man, Maximilian Kolbe, stepped forward, and he was a Roman Catholic priest, and he said, "I'll go instead of this man. I have no family. I'll take his place." And amazingly, they allowed this to happen. And they went down to the starvation chamber, absolutely gruesome. But it says that he prayed with the men there. They began to sing hymns together. And one of the prison guards testified that it felt like a church as they shared together. And one by one they died. And he was the last one to die. And the Pope said at this great service that they had near the Vatican in memory of Maximilian Kolbe, it was like his death was like the victory that our Lord Jesus Christ won. He sacrificed everything that we might know life. That's the potentiality. There's a response for us individually. So in the big sense, Jesus did this for us. But in terms of our response, it's the same path. We all know that to be fruitful, to flourish, and to blossom as individuals, we need to make sacrifices. We know that. Jesus, this verse that we read earlier, in the same way, anyone who holds on to their life just as it is destroys that life. But if you let go, reckless in your love, you'll have it forever, real and eternal. For us to know fruitful lives, for us to fulfill our potentiality as human beings, I believe that it takes us to let go of those hopes and ambitions that we might have as people and invest them in Jesus Christ, who is the one who will make our lives fully what they're meant to be. Have you ever been into an old church that's got dirty old... If you go to London, a lot of these old churches have got very black windows, where all of the pollution sort of coats the windows. But if you get in there and the light shines from the outside, suddenly the glory of this window is lit up and it becomes something that's beautiful. And in a sense, I believe that's what Christ wants to do for us. As we lay down our lives, in a sense, and say, "Lord Jesus, I want to live for you," he lights up our lives. He causes us to be and become what we are meant to be. We know this is true, even great sportsmen. David Beckham said this. He said, "Well, my mates were out." Not a great sacrifice, I must admit. "While my mates were out on Saturday night in the pubs and the clubs, I was at home watching Match of the Day." That was the big sacrifice that David Beckham made. Actually, that I like that the other way around now. You get to a stage of life when you want to stay at home and watch Match of the Day. But every great sportsman will tell you that to become who they've had to become, they've had to make massive sacrifice. But so often it's difficult for us to let go. We want to hold on to things. When we're holding on to stuff, we sometimes forfeit that which is really before us and all that God has for us and all that God invites us to embrace. And this morning when our friends get baptized now, what they're saying is that my life, in a sense, has died, and I'm being made alive in Jesus Christ. That all that he has for me, that I embrace, I'm being immersed into everything that he has for me. And I want his light to shine through, that like that window, I would be illuminated and I would shine forth and be the full person that God has meant me to be. These final words, these are words of Jesus. And he told his disciples, "Anyone who intends to come with me has to let me lead. You're not in the driver's seat. I am. Don't run from suffering. Embrace it. Follow me and I'll show you. Self-help is no help at all. Self-sacrifice is the way. My way. To find yourself. Your true self. What good would it do to get everything you want and lose the real you? And I want to say to you this morning, I put to you humbly that in Jesus Christ, you can discover the real you. Let's just